Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Prescription drugs? In this economy? Anyone who's been to the pharmacy lately knows that medication costs are through the roof. But do any of us know why? Like, really know? We'll answer that question today. This is the Reset Podcast. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Some life-saving medication can cost thousands of dollars per month. We'll learn about some tools and tips for navigating those costs later. But first, what kind of strain does this put on people who are struggling to afford the medicine they need? And how did we even get here in the first place? We spoke with Edwin Muldrow, pharmacist and owner of the independent pharmacy Delcar in North Lawndale. We also talked to Dan Wiseman, host of An Arm and a Leg podcast, a show about the cost of healthcare. Dan, I'll start with you. Tell us your experience filling prescriptions. What's that been like?
Well, gosh, what day are we talking about? there was a day when, as a journalist, I was like, oh, this is a bit of a story. I had a prescription, something I've been taking a long time, generic medicine. I got a call, an automated call from Walgreens that said, hi, you know, this is Walgreens and your prescription is ready and your price will be $720 and some cents.
Yikes.
And, you know, I was used to paying like 20 bucks. And I realized, oh, you know, it's January. Our insurance changed. Maybe they don't have the new insurance and this is the uninsured price. And still, I was like, I mean, this is like an old generic drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
this is... You thought it was a joke.
Well, I didn't think it was a joke. I thought it was good material, though. So I made sure to, like, I called them back and had them play the, called the robot back and had it play that message back into my recorder. Because I was like, that's good material right there. And I looked at a site called GoodRx, which offers discounts on drugs to see, like, what would I be out for here? And the range of prices, it showed me at that time, I think it's a little different now, but at that time it showed me, you know, what the kind of sticker price would be at any pharmacy I'd go to and what the near me and what the price with their coupon would be.
Right.
And the range was bananas.
It was far less.
It was, well, yeah, I could pay 20 bucks at Costco or I could pay up to 720 bucks at Walgreens or 300 and some at CVS without a coupon. Mm. It was wild and it left me curious about something I had thought I'd, this was kind of early in the days of doing a show about the cost of healthcare. I thought like, drug prices is so – everything I could read about it seemed so complicated.
Yeah. Well, give us a sense because I know you've looked into this a lot. What drugs are the most expensive?
Oh, and, man.
And what conditions do they treat?
I defer.
You here. Defer to our pharmacist?
Yeah.
Edwin.
Yes. The antivirals are pretty much the the Cadillac or the Rolls Royce of the pharmacy industry.
Then antivirals.
Antivirals. Then you have your anti-neoplastics if you're a cancer patient. So these are the medications that are really, unattainable. Mm-hmm. Then you have your asthma inhalers, some of the newer inhalers, not the traditional ones like the albuterols. And then, of course, you have your insulin medications. So those are pretty much the categories where you're going to see that sticker shock.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Kaiser Family Foundation found that about 3 in 10 adults actually don't fill their prescriptions because they can't afford it. How often do you hear customers tell you that?
So we'll go back to what we're just talking about, the automated system from Walgreens. So as an independent drugstore, I deal directly with the patient. So when a patient gets that sticker shock, they're looking me dead in the face. So it becomes a personal issue. So when you can hide behind that AI, whatever you want to call it, it's a different experience. So I feel it. So, you know, one of the things I try to promote is have the patient go back to the doctor and say, look, talk with the doctor, talk to the office, because they have incentives that the pharmaceutical companies will give them. They have coupons or discounts that we as pharmacists don't have access to.
Really?
So I try that route first. So, you know.
So the doctor can get it for you for cheaper?
Well, the pharmaceutical companies, so they used to promote within the pharmacies to incentivize patients to say, look, if you come here with this drug, we have this discount that you can use towards your medication.
Right.
But now they empower the doctor's office and the whole physician experience. So now the sales reps deal directly with the doctor's office. So if you ask the doctor or the nurse that you pretty much are dealing with, you say, well, look, I've been to the pharmacy. I got a sticker shock on this medication, but it's important that I take this medicine. Do you have some type of assistance program that you might have readily available that I can, can utilize? And then you'll be surprised that the doctors will produce something because it's still business. They don't want to lose your customer, your patient base. So I just speak on the pharmacy side, but I'm also a businessman. So I challenge that business aspect of it.
Interesting. Dan, what reasons do pharmaceutical companies give for the cost of prescriptions being so high?
Oh, well, they say, oh, gosh, you know, we have to develop new drugs and it's super expensive. And, you know, not every drug that we test is a drug we can end up selling. So we got to get everything we can when we can. I did a little homework and I didn't bring the spreadsheet with me. But, you know, I last night I was like, well, what are we talking about? Because, you know, these are publicly traded companies. They list their profits on an annual statement. They also list what they spend on research and development. And there was one company among the kind of 10 with the biggest kind of profits in dollar amounts where the amount that they spent on R&D was comparable to the amount of profit they took. Not that all of that profit was taken up by R&D, but that the amount that they came back with on top of everything was comparable. The amount of R&D they got was comparable. Others, they were like 13%, 6%. You know, they would get, in other words, the amount they spent on R&D might be 6% of their total revenue for the year, but their profit margin might be 45% for the year. In other words, it's not like they're just scraping by because they're spending so much on research and development.
Mm-hmm.
They're spending some on research and development, and they're making enormous profits. So I don't feel too bad for them. We're paying for it. Yeah.
There's a middleman here that plays a crucial role in the sticker shock that we've been talking about. Explain who the pharmacy benefit managers are and how, and if you can sum up quickly, how they work with pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies.
I'll do my best. I'll be as fast as I can.
Okay.
Essentially, pharmacy benefit managers sit in the middle of every transaction around every drug. And so, including with the pharmacist, right? But in some ways, the most important is between them and the pharmaceutical companies. They're essentially executing insurance for pharma, for drugs. And so they go to all the drug manufacturers and they say, tell us your best price. You know, we want to, and if you give us the best price, we'll put you on our formulary. That's the list of drugs that your insurance will actually cover. There might be four or five drugs for high blood pressure or cholesterol, and your insurance company will say, like, well, take this one, and it's like $5 a month. You take that one, it's 100 or 200 for you. Here's the thing. The pharmacy benefit managers are not negotiating discounts with the pharmaceutical companies. They're not saying, give us your best price. You say your sticker price is $1,000, give it to us for $200. Instead, they're saying, give us a rebate, cash. We buy this from you for $1,000. You give us $800 cash. And that creates an incentive for the pharmaceutical company to jack up that sticker price, the list price, as high as possible. Because if I raised my sticker price now to $2,000, I can give you an $1,800 rebate and still get my $200.
Edwin, I saw your chuckle there. I want to know, first of all, what it's like for you working with these pharmacy benefit managers and how that impacts your day-to-day and the price you can charge.
So to be perfectly clear, I have no direct contact with a pharmacy benefit manager. They're just there. And so we just have to navigate. But the whole construct of the PBM's pharmacy benefit manager is that it was created by the pharmaceutical companies. So if there was some independent or some community input into the creation and the inceptions of the PBM, you would have more transparency, which there's not right now. Here in Illinois, the Citizens Utility Board. So you have buy-in and input of your legislators, the community. So therefore, we can get to the root cause of why these prices are so high. But this is a system, again, that was created by the pharmaceutical companies. So they're controlling all aspects of it. So we as citizens, even as independent business owners, we don't know what's going on. They just tell us, like, okay, this is your reimbursement. But you can't challenge it. So I would like to see the whole process to be modified, like make it more like a mortgage, a title company.
Yeah.
Where you have the seller, you have the buyer, and then you have the lender. But you have your legal representation. So the title company is the independent arbitrator that's making sure the playing field is fair for everybody, so therefore we can conclude a fair and equitable transaction. But it's not so with the pharmacy benefit management company. So if we're going to talk about the pricing, let's talk with the root cause of it, because that's been the death knell for us neighborhood drugstores like myself.
Yeah.
Is that how can you compete? So if you have a, for instance, an asthma inhaler that costs $600, but you're going to reimburse me $398 for it, how do I make up the loss for what I'm paying for this medicine to provide that service for a patient? But if you are a big box retailer and you're buying hundreds of thousands, yeah, then you can negotiate price, and then you probably are getting it at that $400, $390 range. But us independents who are buying from independent wholesalers, we don't have that luxury. So the playing field is not even fair. It's just I don't even know what the word is.
Yeah.
But
well, I want to dig more into that. You own an independent pharmacy, and you're one of the few left in Chicago. You operate in North Lawndale, as I mentioned, where there are few chain pharmacies to begin with. Lay out why you think having an independent pharmacy can be beneficial for the community.
So we can just talk about COVID, the pandemic. I was deemed an essential service business. So I closed on Sunday, but I was open every day. So I was still continuing to provide service. And, you know, I have a front end business where we do groceries. So I'm right on the front lines. So I watched the big chains. Some of them were, you know, dealt with, I don't want to use the words, but, you know, they suffered losses. And by me being rooted in the community, you know, I can do delivery to some of my elder patients around there. So it's just, we just serve a niche role for the people in the community. But now you look at the big box pharmacy, they're moving more into mail order pharmacy. So you're talking about the cost of just paying for a pharmacist, paying for a technician, your insurances, rent if you have to deal with that. But then your reimbursements are so low from the PBM. So how do you stay open and provide business if you can't even become profitable to just to sustain yourself? So, you know, it's like, what do you do? So I proudly say the reason why that we've been in business for 63 years is that my father was smart enough to buy our property. So I'm not paying the rent. You know, I just need to just pay my property taxes and my commercial insurance, and that sustains me. But if you're trying to open up a new independent drugstore to serve a community, the buy-in from the your wholesalers, you know, you have to show so much money up front in cash.
Right.
Then you got to find a location. And so you're going to pay rent, you're going to buy. So these are the other factors outside
additional
of the reimbursements.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I said that these big boxes are slowly kind of moving into mail order pharmacy because it just comes down to cost.
Yeah. Anything to add, Dan?
A couple of things. One is some of those big box pharmacies are also pharmacy benefit managers. CVS is part of CVS Caremark. Caremark is the pharmacy benefit manager, which is also the same corporate entity as Aetna Insurance, right? So that and the insurance company, and that all of the three biggest pharmacy benefit managers are owned by insurance companies. So Express Scripts is owned by Cigna. Optum Rx is the other big one, owned by United Healthcare. And they have an incentive to actually call you as a patient and say, like, hey, Sasha, how'd you like to get your prescriptions by mail? We'll keep it all in-house.
Well, you know what else I wanted to ask you, Dan? President Biden, he signaled that he wants to have Medicare negotiated drug prices. And in doing so, lower the drug prices for everyone. How much of an impact could that have?
A lot. The Inflation Reduction Act, and here I'm like, oh, I should have done my homework and written down all the numbers. The Inflation Reduction Act which was the big package that the Congress passed last summer, includes a provision saying Medicare will be able to, in a few years, negotiate prices on a certain number of drugs with manufacturers. And it's the first time Medicare has ever been empowered to negotiate for drug prices. So this may have some effect on what those of us who are not on Medicare pay for drugs. It's going to have a giant impact on the country's finances,
mm-hmm.
because currently there's no limit, right, to what Medicare might pay for prescription drugs. The drug companies charge price X, and Medicare pays it. Mm-hmm. In other countries, right, where governments generally provide health care, governments negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies and say, if you want to sell your drug, you know, to us, to distribute to our people, well, we got to talk about price. And if it's not, you know, if we don't like the price, we may not provide that drug. We're not convinced that it's going to provide the benefit that you say it does. May not make it available.
What specific changes would you like to see, Edwin, from the federal government?
So just to kind of piggyback on what he just said, so former Senator Max Baucus from Montana, he was the architect of the Affordable Care Act. And in order for him to get the 60 votes that he needed to pass it, he had to strip out single-payer language. So with a single-payer option, that eliminates all the different actors that are involved. So now you can just deal with one person, one entity, and negotiate price. Just recently, former Senator Max Baucus is now talking about single-payer. So in 2009, it wasn't, apropos to bring it up.
Yeah.
And then you see the different pharmaceutical companies, I'm sorry, the insurance companies from Humana, Aetna, Caremark, where they've been the staples of Wall Street as far as profitability and Washington lobby. But now the man that was the architect of it is now promoting single payer. So, yes, it has brought us to this point, but it needs to be modified. And that's why I use that example of let's call it like a title company at a mortgage company. But I'll even go a step further. So you use, like, I love football, NFL football. So you have an NFL commissioner. Mm-hmm. The NFL commissioner is hired by the owners.
Right.
So the commissioner is supposed to be there for the good of the game, but he's paid by the owners. So that's the PBMs. The PBMs was created by the pharmaceutical companies. So it's supposed to represent the people, but it's serving a purpose of these. So that's why I say you
except
need this.
Except it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. You need this Citizens Utility Board. Have the community with a buy-in, then we can start getting to some more affordable prices.
Yeah. That was Edwin Muldrow, pharmacist and owner of Delcar Pharmacy in North Lawndale. Dan Weissman, who's host of the healthcare podcast, An Arm and a Leg, is still with us. Let's bring in another voice to talk about ways you can save money on prescription drug costs. Joining us now is Kristen Schorsch, health and county government reporter for WBEZ. Kristen, there are pharmacy coupons out there that can cut costs by more than a half. Now, I've used one of them before. My bill went from around $120 to $10. I remember the pharmacist actually recommended it and helped me find the right coupon. And now I understand you've also used them. How do they work?
Well, I haven't used these coupons. I've used these other strategies I'm going to mention, but I know of people who've used these. So basically, like GoodRx is an example.
Yes.
It allows you.
That's what I used.
Yeah. So it allows you to compare the cost of drugs at different pharmacies, and then you take that coupon and you take it to the pharmacy. I was searching online of a bunch of different kinds of drugs the other day. And so for like a common blood pressure drug, a coupon brought the price down to like a dollar for a 30-day supply.
Wow.
Which is obviously great. But for other like specialty drugs or really high cost drugs like insulin, for example, it's not a deal. You still want to go through, if you have health insurance, you still want to use that health insurance, because that's the other thing. GoodRx doesn't allow you to use your health insurance. Mm. So if you have it, you can't use that in conjunction with a coupon. So that's what I found. Yeah. It's just depending on the kind of drug you need.
Well, Dan, let's dig more into GoodRx, because I immediately questioned whether it was a scam. But I mean,
it's like too good to be true. Right, a dollar for 30 days.
They're legit, but there are privacy concerns with GoodRx. So walk us through what we should keep in mind when we use these coupons.
So a couple things. Well, Kristen, you mentioned the big one, which is two big ones, right? One is GoodRx doesn't always get you a deal that good. Even when it's a big reduction, like I talked with someone last year who uses a drug for rheumatoid arthritis called Enbrel, which is like the list price of Enbrel is $12,000 a month. And GoodRx, she can get it for half, $6,000 a month. Who can afford $6,000 a month? Yeah. You know, nobody.
Right.
Other medications like insulin or certain ADHD drugs, also there's practically no discount. So, okay, that's not exactly a cure-all. And that's the other thing is when you pay for medication with GoodRx, it doesn't count toward your insurance deductible. Your insurance doesn't kick in. And also, insurance, right? Do we have half an hour to talk about how insurance works?
I wish.
It's awesome to have another healthcare warrior on because we could talk about this for a long time.
But, yeah. basically there's about 50 different ways that your insurance is essentially telling you like, well, you're going to pay this, for instance, your deductible. That's how much you spend at the start of the year before your insurance pays anything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have a special deductible for pharma. So now it all depends on you. Maybe you don't have the deductible for pharma. Your insurance is going to kick in right away. Or you don't want to spend money, you know, where they could be helping you out instead.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have a deductible of $1,000 and you're not thinking like, well, okay, I need this drug right now for they want to charge me $100 for it, but I'm never at the pharmacy. I don't need medicine that much. I'm not going to pay that $1,000. I don't want to be in that position. Great. Let's use this GoodRx coupon.
Yeah.
I'll get my discount today. I'm not going to worry about it. If my life changes and I need a bunch of medicine, that's going to be a whole other set of adjustments.
If you scroll through Twitter, Kristen, looking at conversations about pharmacy coupons, you see lots of folks bringing up, well, why do you have to ask for them? Why aren't they just offered?
Yeah, wouldn't that be easy?
What's your sense of that?
Well, I think I bet you it depends on which pharmacy you go to, right? Not every pharmacist is the same person or has the same idea about how much you should pay.
I was so grateful to that lady that was like, hey, you can use this, because otherwise I had no idea what my options were.
Right. And I mean, I think it also depends. Like, I've been in a situation where I was going to a pharmacy every 30 days to get a re-up on a prescription, right? And then I found out through my doctor, she was like, why don't you just do 90-day mail order? Mm-hmm. Why are you going to the pharmacy every 30 days? That person at the pharmacy at the time told me, don't do mail order. It's slow. It's not going to be effective. You're not going to get your medicine in time. So I thought that, because that's what that person told me. This was years ago, right?
Yeah.
Now I only do 90-day supply. It's not only cheaper than a 30-day supply in a lot of cases. I mean, you're buying in bulk. It's like going to Sam's Club, Costco, whatever, right? You're buying in bulk. So you're getting a better deal. And then you don't have to go to the pharmacy every 30 days. It's convenience. Who wants to do that? That was one of the tips I was going to say is, mail order every 90 days if you can.
Mm.
And if you can, depends on what you're ordering, right? If you
right.
need insulin and you live in a place like Chicago where several months out of the year you don't want your postal worker doesn't ring the doorbell every time you're not home to answer it.
Yeah.
You don't want that sitting out in the sun, right? Or you might live someplace where your packages aren't secure. You don't know who might just wonder what's inside and take it. So everything's a choose your own adventure in this country. Like there's no one size fits all.
Choose your own
solution.
Adventure. Yeah, it's technically illegal to import medicine, but
there are
ways to order medicine online, it sounds like.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You can order medicine. So
you go through your pharmacy, like Express Scripts you mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So there's ordering medicine through your own pharmacy in this country, and there's nothing illegal about that. You can ship it through the mail. One of the other things that you can do is there are pharmacies in Canada that will ship to U.S. addresses. It's technically illegal, but apparently enforcement is fairly lax.
Mm.
So I hear. not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer. Passing on a tip.
Sasha has lived in Canada.
Yes. I may have a Canadian address or two or three or 10. Okay, so Kristen, shopping around, we know for the best price, that's a no-brainer. What other tips can you give? What's the best way to do that? Where does someone begin?
Yep. So definitely shop around because your doctor doesn't necessarily know, you know, which pharmacy is going to be cheaper for you. I recently had a thing where I was going through a pharmacy and then I found another one that was a third of the price. A third. Why would I not do that, right? So shop around, definitely buy in bulk. Ask for generic or alternatives. If you find that the medicine that your doctor wants you to get is outrageously expensive, go back to your doctor and say, is this the generic? Can you give me an alternative? Can something else work too?
Yeah.
I would also ask if it's cheaper if you don't use your health insurance. So I'm not talking about a coupon like GoodRx. I'm just saying go to the pharmacy and say, how much would this be if I didn't use my insurance? Because in a lot of cases, the drug is actually cheaper if you just pay out of pocket. Yep. I would ask that. I was also going to say there's something called manufacturer coupons. It's a little bit different. So say you have health insurance, and but they don't cover like a newer drug that's really expensive. You can still, you go straight to the manufacturer and they will give you essentially a coupon and they'll say, hey, we'll give this to you like a tube of ointment for $100 for a 30-day supply. So that's a way for you to be able to access that drug. There are caveats with that. A lot of the manufacturer coupons, they have time limits on them. So maybe it's for a year. Mm. So then you're going to have to find another drug because you're not going to pay like $12,000 out of pocket, right?
Or you'll renew it for a year. I mean, we've done this in our family where it's like, this is good for a year. Come back to us next January. Maybe we'll have the same deal again.
Mm. Right. Yeah. It's a lot of legwork for a person, right? You really have to advocate for yourself.
It is a lot of digging around. Let's go back to something we briefly touched on earlier, Dan. Patient assistance programs, they help afford medication through their insurance. How does it work exactly? And what are the pitfalls that folks should be aware of?
Oh, boy. So some of these coupons are versions of a patient assistance program.
Yeah.
And the deal here is, If a drug costs you a certain amount, you may not be able to pay, you know, through your deductible or through the copays to get your insurance to help you out. So the drug manufacturer's like, well, we don't want to lose the sale entirely. We'll help you out a certain amount. And that's especially good for them if they're helping you get through that deductible and then your insurance company's kicking in for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies do not like that. They would prefer that you not get this very expensive drug at their expense. And so they will say, They've created programs called copay accumulator programs. I don't know why it's called that. I don't know what that means. But what it means in
practice— You're accumulating copays?
Am I collecting them like bottle caps? What it means is they're saying, in effect, if the drug company is helping you pay for this drug rather than you paying cash out of your pocket, it doesn't count toward your deductible. So you're supposed to pay $1,000 deductible. Well, if you got $1,000 in help from the drug company, it mm-hmm. doesn't count. You still got to pay $1,000 out of pocket.
Does any of all this apply to folks on Medicare and Medicaid?
Oh, what a good question. There are caveats here. And the answer is those coupons are not available to folks on Medicare or, I think, on Medicaid. Medicaid's a whole other situation. Yeah. But federal law considers a consideration like that coupon to be potentially called a kickback to you, the user, as if they're paying me to use their drug. And so Medicare is a whole other deal, which I can't do for all the ins and outs.
Kristen, how can patient advocacy groups help here?
Well, I think they can definitely be a sounding board if people can find them, right? I think patient advocacy groups are really important. I think we don't know enough about them and don't talk about them enough. They can support you. They can figure out, hey, how much can you afford? What's a good deal for you? They can give you these tips that we're talking about that you might not be aware of. I bet you a lot of people don't know that they can negotiate in a certain way, like how much your drug should cost, right? By asking for generics, by paying without health insurance, by just asking, by shopping around to all these pharmacies, because it takes a lot of work. So I think if you're able to reach out and find a patient advocate, not only can they help you get a deal, but also there are certain patient advocates that are collecting patient stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are helping drive this national conversation about lowering the cost of drugs, which is leading to the what's the name of the act? The Inflation Reduction Act, that is going to get Medicare to finally be able to negotiate drug costs. So things like that, it kind of spirals into a movement. It's helpful.
Well, you know, as we started out talking about GoodRx, and I remember my initial thought is, how in the world can they make these drugs so cheap, right? How can the cost become so cheap? Then I thought, how are they making money? I mean, I hear they're not selling data to advertisers.
Right.
How do they get paid? How do they?
My understanding is, and I don't think they talk about, I haven't seen them talk about this publicly, but they're essentially subcontracting with the pharmacy benefit manager. They're getting those discounts. They're arranging all the things so that they are getting a little slice of every transaction. And since they're not like spent, they're not holding inventory, they're not paying for anything, they're not paying rent, getting a little slice on a lot of transactions.
I mean, there has to be something.
Yeah.
Might be right.
Yeah, you're not getting a drug for a dollar
for like
goodness of your heart.
The goodness of someone's heart. Yeah.
Well, but from the PBM's perspective, they're like, a dollar is what we get for this anyway. When we sell it through our usual channels, we work it through somebody's insurance, we already take a dollar for this. We're gonna give GoodRx a penny of that. Fine, great. We made a sale we wouldn't have made otherwise.
These are some great tips, folks. We've been talking with Dan Wiseman, host of An Arm and a Leg podcast, and Kristen Schorsch, WBEZ Cook County government and health reporter. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
That episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, and it was edited by Ethan Schwab and Stephanie Kim. If you like the conversations we're having here, let's keep the discussion going online. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube by searching WBEZ Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I'll talk to you again soon.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.